Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil. Gil back next Tuesday as he's enjoying some time in Miami right now on the beach Bill Lady told us, Kelly. So
allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah, we can't say that.
Maybe
for
he's
sure.
in Bermuda. Who knows?
Maybe Bermuda. You never know. All those, you know, places, you know, East Coast.
Ben and I were just talking about Bermuda.
We were just talking about Bermuda. That's why we're bringing in Paul Carr to talk Bermuda. Hey, it's a great day. It's a Friday. Great day, Kelly, unless you are a representative for Nike and Major League Baseball pants. But outside of that, you're doing pretty good on this day today. As we welcome in our pal Paul Carr to talk some soccer from True Media Sports, find him on the Expected Value podcast as well. Paul, we'll talk a lot of Premier League. We have the big cup final this weekend as well with Liverpool and Chelsea. But you know, MLS is underway. We're just talking Miami. And Inter-Miami is just now this, you know, this mega hype machine, essentially, with Lionel Messi. They win their opener, just kickstart the season against Real Salt Lake. What do you make, though, just of the actual betting numbers as part of this Miami team that were horrible last year before Messi got there, ended up not making the playoffs, and now they're favorites by an unbelievable margin. They're plus 275 right now at DraftKings. For context, LAFC, your second favorite here on opening weekend at plus 750. What do you make of the hype train that is Inter-Miami?
I mean, from a betting perspective, like, those lines are just ridiculous because, I mean, look, it's a long MLS season. About two-thirds of the league makes the playoffs. So, like, Miami's line's going to be, it can't really get much shorter just realistically because they have to go through so many rounds of playoffs and, you know, it's knockout soccer where things happen. So, yeah, there's zero chance I'm interested in playing this line. Like, honestly, there's might be a better shot that the wheels just come off completely and they miss the playoffs than of winning MLS Cup. Just because, I mean, they obviously have a bunch of great players. They're also, you know, in their mid 30s or later, guys can get hurt. If things start to go wrong, it could just be one of those, you know, the glamour sexy team falls apart type of stories. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's not off the table either. So yeah, a plus 275 when they're, you know, not necessarily a whole lot better than those next two, three teams. And they're in a loaded Eastern Conference. I'm not going anywhere near that.
Thank you for setting the record straight on that, Paul, because it is laughable. Kelly's over here looking for no prices on
I am. Or an under on a win total. Okay, so there's none of that out there, but I do think the one that's worth bringing up is maybe the top goal scorer market, because you got Messi at plus 275, and then Luis Suarez on the same team with him now, right? He's second, plus 750. Right. Everybody else's double digits are longer. Is there, and I know I'm randomly throwing a market at you, Paul, but is there anybody else in the MLS you think would have some value? Like, I mean, when you're talking double digits.
Yeah. I mean, there's a handful in that 1,000 to 2,000 tier that I think are interesting, whether it's Boanga, who scored a bunch last year. Hany Mukhtar at plus 1,600 is interesting for Nashville. He takes penalties, which is also always very important. That's one big question. If you're trying to pick Messi or Suarez, you assume Messi's taking penalties. But you're not totally sure because that's an extra, you know, 3 to 5 goals a year that can usually make a difference in a golden boot race. So yeah, the Miami guys at that shorter price with some of the unknowns, not interested. But Boanga's not bad. The Atlanta guy, whose name I can never pronounce, at plus 1,200 isn't terrible. Mukhtar at plus 1,600 is probably the most interesting to me just because he's done it and been in that range before.
Georgios Giakoumakis, Kelly, is my
attaboy.
That's just my, you know, play-by-play guy, like, stab at it. Just to, you know, you just got to have confidence, Paul, and roll with it. That's really the key there. Let's go across the pond here where been a big week of action already. We had Champions League ties. We've wrapped up the first legs, Europa and Conference League knockout rounds as well. And now we have some cup finals this week with the Carabao Cup. Great sponsor there across the pond. But Liverpool's dealing with some injury issues here. Mohamed Salah is very much in doubt there as part of a number of injuries there for Liverpool who take on Chelsea. How do you feel like that will play itself out considering Liverpool's been the better team on balance by far than Chelsea, but obviously dealing with a number of injuries?
Yeah, this is tricky from a handicapping perspective because we don't know, is Salah going to play? Darwin Nunez, the big forward up top, he's questionable at best, I think, right now. I think there's hope they get one of those guys back in some capacity, but we just don't know what that is. So if I'm looking at this on the bright side, you can get plus money on Liverpool to beat Chelsea in regulation, like plus 115, which is where I lean right now. Full transparency, I haven't played it yet because I want a little more injury information, but that's the direction I lean. Just because Liverpool, they're much better, even with a few injuries. They beat Chelsea 4-1 last month. So getting plus money on them to win, again, this is a 90-minute bet, I think is pretty good. I would probably hold off at least till later today to make sure you get, you know, a little bit better sense of who may or may not be available. But they're still a decent team. Now, they rolled last week in the league over the weekend. So you get plus money on the better team, even with some injuries. I lean that way right now.
It's certainly a number you might think is swung a little bit too far. You have Liverpool 25 points clear of Chelsea in the actual table, first versus 10th. And yet, as you say, Paul, plus price there right now. Mm-hmm. As we go to the actual Premier League card as well, a couple plays you want to start with on your actual card here, Paul, where you get a Brighton team that has been very up and down, a team that can score in bunches, but has been a little bit more inconsistent. Mm-hmm. They're 7th right now on the table. And after a disastrous start, I mean, Everton's found a way to climb out of the relegation zones for now, just very, very slightly. By no means are they safe whatsoever. Everton in 17th here. Brighton pretty significant favorites there on the south coast tomorrow as they take on Everton.
Yeah, and this, I've harped on this a few times with Gil as well. Everton had a 10-point deduction for, you know, financial issues, we'll just call them. But, you know, Premier League of financial fair play or still trying to figure out their relationship, and Everton was the got the raw end of the stick, perhaps. So anyway, they should have 10 more points than they do, just from a how good is this team perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little confused by this line, just because, I mean, you said Brighton's in 7th, Everton's in 17th, but their underlying numbers, you know, your expected goal difference, your shot difference, they're pretty similar. Brighton's about 6th in expected goal difference. Everton's only a couple spots back. Everton's just run very cold this season as far as they're not finishing super well. Their opponents have been finishing well, relatively. They've got about 12 goals worse in goal difference than they probably should on average. So all that to say that I think this is a much more even matchup than it looks. I like Everton double chance plus 100. So you're getting the win or the draw there. Some books you'll just find it like plus half a goal. This game plays into Everton's hands because Brighton likes to have the ball. They're second in possession in the league this year. Everton's 19th, but they're fine. They're solid defensively, fourth fewest goals allowed, second worst shots allowed. They've drawn 4 of their last 5 and they only lost to Man City. Probably should have won a couple of those draws. So yeah, this is just much more even than the table looks than I think these lines suggest. I like the double chance at plus 100. If you're feeling crazy, you want to play them to win at plus 310 or so. I don't hate it. But yeah, double chance, even money for me.
And that was a 1-1 match back in November when Everton was just in putrid form.
They were not good.
That was a rough time to be alive if you were an Everton fan there. 1-1 in that one. Two teams, Paul, for tomorrow that are, and this is actually not for tomorrow. This is the rest of the card here. It's actually the Monday night fixture there in the Premier League. Two teams that have been in horrible form. I mean, West Ham was so impressive. If you talk about August and September, they look like a different team altogether. If it's not Jared Bowen, it seems like nobody else can do anything right now. 3 straight losses for West Ham, but they get a Brentford team who's lost 4 of their last 5 as well. Difficult to handicap, I would imagine, on the side, but you are looking at the total here. What's the angle?
This is definitely a weird one because West Ham both played well and ran well early, and now they're kind of not doing either one, but they're still, you know, 9th in the table. Brentford's been running relatively cold all season, you know, and even though they're behind, I think they're generally considered the better team since West Ham's just a slight favorite at home. That's what that suggests. I just think we're going to have goals here. So I have over 2.5 at minus 135. Both teams' games average over 3 goals. And maybe more importantly, about 2/3 of their games have had at least 3 goals between them. Brentford attack has been better since Ivan Toney came back, you know, a month plus ago. So that's good. West Ham's defense is terrible. Bottom 3 in shots allowed and expected goals conceded. 11 goals they've allowed over the last 3 games. They're not in good form either. And I just think from a narrative standpoint, like both teams think they can win this game. You know, West Ham's looking at a team that's below them in the table and they're at home. Brentford is going on the road to a team that, you know, concedes chances left and right. So I think this should be an open game. Over 2.5 goals, minus 135.
And Paul Carr joining us right now from True Media Sports on a numbers game. As far as the overall title race here, Paul, it's shaping up to be a great final stretch. You've Liverpool 4 points clear, but with 12 matches left, Man City 4 back, but they have the added match, 13 still to play. And then Arsenal 5 back. Arsenal have been in amazing form, 21-2 on aggregate over their last 5 matches, but just completely laid an egg on the road at Porto in Champions League midweek right now. Latest odds heading into this weekend, Man City even money, Liverpool plus 170, Arsenal 4-1. Where do you stand, especially on that Arsenal number, who are in the best form of their season, but did just have the big setback in Champions League? And at the very least, if the form continues, you feel like they're live. 4-1's tasty, but what would you say to bettors wanting to grab that number right now?
It is so tempting. I mean, I have an Arsenal future from before the season, so it's not something personally I'm looking to play. But the case is, you know, Liverpool is wrecked by injuries, as you mentioned. Man City is in really good form, but also, you know, one injury away, you know, De Bruyne or Haaland gets hurt. And we saw, you know, they were still good without him, but, you know, they could, the wheels can come off is probably extreme, but, you know, they could slip fairly easily. And Arsenal has had the best defense in the league, and they can build on that. They're not conceding a lot of goals. The question is just, can they score? You know, that Champions League game was, man, it frustrates me because, I mean, look, I had an Arsenal bet, so that's part of this. But you're the better team. Go try and score a goal. Don't play for this draw. And I was almost happy they conceded because that's what they deserved for not trying to, you know, go get a goal and win and cruise once you go home. So they have the potential.
They're still
Arsenal.
Yeah.
And you wonder if they have, I don't know. I mean, I'm a numbers guy, but then I start saying things like, do they have the gumption or the character or whatever it is?
Yeah.
And I kind of hate myself saying that, but that seems like what it boils down to. Or maybe it's just more the mentality to do what they have to do that we just haven't seen yet. The number, but I'm hesitant to go grab it.
Didn't even get a shot off in the Champions League match. Kelly and I were texting. We're like, God, what a rock solid under. And we kind of like talked in circles around it. And we're like, yeah, we're going to lay off. And
yeah. We should have just auto bet the under 2.5 for all 8 games in that first round. I think 7 of them hit.
Yeah.
So, you would be, if you round robin those bad boys, you'd be swimming in some gold right now. Paul Carr, great to see him. As always, give him a follow at Paul Carr from True Media and the Expected Value podcast. Be well, Paul. Great to catch up with you.
You bet. Thanks, Ben.
When we come back out of numbers game, it is that time where we talk college baseball. We'll go through some of my early season futures, and I am looking at teams to target when we return on ANG.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, this is a good one. The challenge of handicapping college hoops. Yes, Kelly, I can, even without even reading it, I can say yes. That is very, very, a very, very apt way to describe the season. The quote from Matt Eumanns in our newsletter today about, because he has his Circa College Hoops Challenge, and it was a struggle last week for all the contestants, and he goes, my only comment is we need to do a hell of a lot better than last Saturday's debacle. It was called a debacle by Matt Eumanns. I agree. This has been a tough year to handicap the colleges, and you know, when you have smart money getting a lot of games wrong, that's a lot of times an indication of how hard it is to get stuff all pieced together here for the college basketball. I will talk about some final plays, some of the top college basketball games. Lines are not out yet for Saturday. I don't have anything for tonight, Kelly, but we'll talk about some of the marquee games for tomorrow. You got NBA tonight? You got bets in the account?
I've got one that I'm looking at making, yes.
Nice. Okay.
Nothing in the account yet for tonight.
Well, for the next 9 minutes and 43 seconds, I'll be talking college baseball, Kelly. So feel free to
bet something. Want me to bet something?
I'm just saying. I mean, I didn't go into this segment expecting you to be, you know, I'm not going to, hey, what do you think about Tennessee's bullpen? What do you think?
Well, pitching's important here, Ben. That's really, you got to have that top of the line starter that can go on Friday nights and set you up through the weekend. And then you got to have the bats in the bullpen to carry you the rest of the way.
I thought you were going to go full Mike McCarthy on me and go, you know, he's a baseball player. This guy's a baseball, he knows how to play the game. We do, you know, we
That's
do these
one,
for
yeah.
play by play. We do these coaching calls with all the, and it's great, right? Because you hear the stories about the players, and you know, coaches are pretty good at trying to avoid like the super coach speak because it's a closed door. You know, it's kind of all background info. It's not like really on the record,
right?
But you still sometimes get the coaches who kind of slip, and they're like, oh yeah, man, he's just a hell of a ball player, man. It's like, all right, thanks. What am I going to say on the broadcast? Yeah, you know, coach told us he's just a great player. What am I going to get out of that? You know?
Overall, great guy.
He's just a great human being. Anyway, so while Kelly looks to make some NBA bets, let's talk about college baseball. Great segment from Matt Grissom yesterday, and you know, the general thought too. College baseball, it has been a sport that, you know, the reason we're talking about this, Gil has really been a proponent of betting on college baseball because of the extremely loose markets on this in the past. There is so much volatility and a lot of variance with college baseball in general, and it's now starting to become one of the more kind of niche sports that is growing tremendously in popularity. National ratings were the highest they'd ever been last year as part of the postseason. You have more star power, more guys coming from college and making quick, rapid ascensions to the big leagues as, you know, NIL has become a bigger part of it. Fewer and fewer top prospects are going out of the draft from high school. They're going to college, or at least for, you know, for that 2-3 year period, and getting a lot better. So the talent pool is as good as it's ever been. And that leads us into some early season futures. Now, Kelly, because of the, you know, the market isn't as great here in Vegas, the numbers aren't as, you know, as wonderful as you would love to see. I haven't made any bets yet, but just some kind of early leans here, some teams I'm looking to keep track of. And I focused on the SEC and the Big 12, where those are your two gauntlet conferences in college baseball. If you have teams that get off to slower starts, or you have that midseason swoon, maybe you don't bet these numbers now, at least for the shorter shots I'll talk about. But there could be some really good opportunities to jump in, buy low on teams, because these are teams I have already seen this year who I really believe like the pieces are there. And it's just a matter of, does it all come together? It's really no different than any other sport, Kelly. It's just with the variance, you can see these numbers fluctuate wildly, go right all over the board. Now, TCU is the one I hit last year where it's easy to say in retrospect, oh, what a great pick. They were 40-1. You gave it out preseason. Well, it wasn't really that great of a pick because they were 75-1 a week before the tournament started, and I had a really bad number in my account. Sure enough, TCU just happens to make a run to Omaha, and that number looked great, but that's kind of the whole basis of why we're doing this exercise.
Yeah. And how often that applies to so many of the things that we talk about betting-wise, right? Yeah. When we're talking about betting futures, it's just – It almost no matter what the sport, we often bring it up as a pro tip because there is usually opportunities. You don't need to force bets before a season. There's usually opportunities now with all these sports books posting futures throughout the entirety of the season for you to jump in at some point in season and get a better number than what you would have gotten. So yeah, always something to keep in mind, but I think it's great to go in, you know, head into a season. You know, it's already started, but right over, head into a season kind of with some teams circled of who you're going to be looking out for, of who might dip in prices. I mean, I'm doing that right now with the NBA and those Celtics. Exactly.
So these are just a few teams that I've looked at who, and not certainly by no means is this a complete list of the contenders. There's a lot right now to sift through. It's just kind of number based, and as well as just upside in teams I view like could really finish strong with the way the current roster is constructed. So we'll start kind of with a short shot, work my way down here. Tennessee, of the short shots right now, they look the part. I called two of their games of their three in the opening weekend last week. It's a team that's +160 to reach the College World Series, and it's nice that those markets are now out there. That's why we wanted to include both of those here on the graphic. So +160 to reach Omaha, 13-1 to win it all. A team that's been to Omaha two of the last 3 years. They've made it to Supers each of the last three for head coach Tony Vitello, who's totally turned that program around. You know, there was some turnover on the roster again. They had four different draft picks in the top seven rounds, but they're a team that loaded up through the transfer portal as well as some really high-profile freshman prospects as well. The big one who there were some question marks about how would his game translate from the ACC to the SEC was Billy Amick, and that guy was a stud when I watched him in person last weekend. I had a huge weekend, had multiple extra base hits, couple of long homers in a major league park in Globe Life Field. He made some big league plays there. The entire lineup is one you look at, and while they had some struggles with runners in scoring position, I'm not going to make any big leaps here so early in the year. It's a team that can mash, and against SEC pitching, they figure to look the part and hold their form all season on that side. It's the pitching that for so many of these teams is a big question mark. Tennessee had Chase Dollander, who was a top 10 pick by Colorado last year, highest selection ever by a pitcher in Tennessee program history. And so while the Vols have to replace him, the 1-2 punch they have at the top of the rotation is lights out right now. Drew Beam, who I saw in person, was tremendous in his first start. They also go down to A.J. Russell. He combined with a reliever for 17 strikeouts in the season opener. It's a really, really good 1-2 punch, which you need in the SEC to have that electric Friday-Saturday starter. There's a lot of other candidates, too, who are good, talented, and have experience who could very easily develop into a good third starter. And Tennessee has one of the best pitching coaches in the country as well. Has been there 35 years. So you really trust their development on that side as well. It's not like I love the number at 13-1, but that's just a team I'm keeping my eye on as far as a team that is going to be in the mix. They will almost certainly host a regional this year and will be very, very live to make a deep run into Omaha.
How many tournament teams?
It's a full 64. But you get six.
Oh,
so
how many of the College World Series is only 16, though?
Eight in the College World Series.
Eight, okay.
You get, yeah, so 16 regionals, 16 regional winners, then they play a 2 of 3 in the Super Regionals.
Yeah, I was thinking.
So to make the Supers, Yeah, you got to be final 16 and then final 8.
Okay. I was thinking those numbers reached for College World Series were really damn good. And those are the bets you should be making. Makes a lot more sense.
Down, so down in the final eight. Teams, yeah. Right. Yeah, makes a little bit more sense. Texas A&M, if we stick SEC, that's sort of a mid-tier team who I'm really buying into teams that have work to do pitching-wise, but have the upside there. A&M has one of the best lineups in the country. That is not a problem. They have the number one overall draft prospect right now for 2025, Jace LaViolette. It's production, it's power, it's experience up and down that lineup. But they were bottom half of the SEC in pitching last year. They got a new pitching coach in Max Weiner, who is a former Mariners minor league coordinator. And the pitching staff is improved top to bottom. Will it be improved enough for them to make a deep run? That's why the number's at 20-1, because with a lineup as good as A&M's, you would expect that number to be shorter. It's just the pitching that's a question mark. That's, again, a team to monitor here, and I expect big improvements to be made with a new, analytic-driven pitching coach that they brought in for head coach Jim Schlossnagel, who's been one of the best, talking about longevity guy, who was a great coach at TCU, and now at A&M. I expect A&M to be right there and in the mix for a deep run as well. If you're going further down the board, a team I was really impressed with when I saw them in person, Texas Tech, who's 60-1 right now in the Big 12. They made it to Omaha a couple years ago. Top Big 12 offense last year. Best offense in the conference, but pitching, once again, Kelly, question mark. They've got a ton of depth, a lot of quality arms, but the weekend rotation is still sort of up for grabs, and that's why you see that number so long. They're 6-1 to reach Omaha, 60-1 to win it all. But Kyle Robinson's a guy I watched in person, and I really expect him to take a big leap. He had a 5.36 ERA last year, which is a little bit misleading because it's always hard to pitch in the Big 12. It is a power run-heavy league there. But Robinson has a super live arm, hits 96 on the fastball, guy that has a really good arsenal, and he has all the makings of a legit top-end Friday night starter, which in the college baseball lingo, Friday night starter is your ace, in case you're wondering that, Kelly.
I brought it up earlier in this segment. Come on, how dare you accuse me of that? I know that. I know that much.
Kyle Robinson at Texas Tech. For talking with Coach Tim Tadlock, and I said this on the air yesterday, admitting to Matt Grissom that it is oftentimes hard for me when you get so close to the sun here when you cover teams and you know every person on the roster and you talk to the coach, it can get really easy to drink the Kool-Aid, right? So you try to learn to sift through some of that. But watching Tech and the way they went 2-1, their loss was to Tennessee. Nothing wrong with a loss to Tennessee. They struck out 17 times in that game. But that's a team who clearly, with the way the Big 12 is set up, will take their lumps early. I view that to be a really good thing for the pitching. And if you start to see some improvements in that regard, and kind of check in midseason, I don't see that number really moving a ton for Tech. Team that very much is live, and I expect them fully to be in the postseason, at least have a shot there to advance out of a regional.
I've also heard that if you find out from the coach that Friday night starter might get scratched late, there could be a lot of value benefit.
I have heard that as well. We take our job very seriously, though, as play-by-play guys. We keep that close to the vest. We would never try to disseminate any information out there like that. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on A Numbers Game with Paul Spohr talking Major League Baseball.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our daily best bet emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide for March Madness, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. You can visit VSiN.com/pro to subscribe today. That is VSiN.com/pro. Big thanks to our pal Ryan Hyatt chimes in, letting us know he's glad that we're talking college baseball, Kelly. And especially he included you, Kelly, because he knows that you, Friday Night Aces,
that's
ball
right.
Players, he knows.
Hey, I covered Buster Posey for a year, right? Expert. Actually, one of the, if we want to talk baseball things, Trey Turner I covered when he was playing high school ball.
Really?
That was one of the most absurd things I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. High school Trey Turner? Oh my God.
South Florida got some great, great baseball prospects, obviously. He was one of those, though, that, I think he bat, 620 was his batting average or something, and you wouldn't believe it until you saw him. And then it was like he just hit everything. Everything was a hit.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Is that the number one on your list of guys, now pro athletes who you saw in high school who were just, at it? I mean, you saw a lot because you're in Florida.
Lamar Jackson.
would be Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one. I'm like, put him on a field with high school kids. It was the most unfair thing ever. Yeah. It's like playing with Bo Jackson back in the day.
So granted, you know, covering high school sports in Missouri, you didn't have this, you know, the same, you know, number of guys. Just volume is in Florida. But I saw Michael Porter Jr. Covered him in high school. He was a freshman, and he was like, you're playing against these like 5'9", 200-pound linebackers.
6'7" at that point, probably.
Yeah, it was all like football players playing basketball, and he's just absolutely having his way. That would be mine, seeing MPJ. Tolton Catholic in Columbia, Missouri. Didn't expect to get the shout-out to a Tolton Catholic today.
It was always the guys who played the other sports was always funny, too, because it was like Jacoby Brissett. Always enjoyed watching him play on the basketball team. Like, he was one that I covered, and it was – you could tell they just utilized him basically as a point forward. It was like, hey, you're the quarterback. Just be the quarterback on the court. You're not really that athletic when it comes to, like, basketball athleticism. But, like, just get out there and be quarterback
for
us.
As a youth tennis player, I'd have loved to have seen, like, watch, like, a Drew Brees, you know, like U16. Remember Drew Brees, nationally ranked tennis player. Just, like, to see how good that guy must have been. Anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying we've got Paul Spohr here from Fangraphs to talk some Major League Baseball. I'm curious who Paul would say, like, if he was just extrapolating that out, like, who would be the current pro who would have been the most fun to watch in, like, Little League if you go back 15 years, Paul. I'm curious what your Mount Rushmore is on that.
I'm going to go pretty easy on this one and say Bryce Harper. I mean, he was on the cover at 15.
That's a good one.
He covered Sports Illustrated, just blasting homers. I think it was out of Tropicana. And, yeah, of course, metal bats or whatever. But, yeah, I'm going to go easy there and say that watching him just decimate kids would have been great. You know, I live in Texas, too, so I kind of get some of that up close with certain guys around here. I'm not always as tuned in on the high school stuff, but if I were more tuned in, there's so many places I could go and watch guys dominate in all of the sports, baseball, football, basketball. So lots of great high school work here in Texas.
Bryce Harper at the Trop. What was the story behind that again?
Well, he hit it off like the back of the – he hit it like 500 feet off.
Yeah, but why was he there?
I don't know why he was there, because he's from Vegas. Right. So I'm not exactly sure.
But he put on a show. That's all we ever remember.
Maybe there was some sort of youth event there, and so that's why they did – I don't know, but that's my best guess because, he's from Vegas. So they had no real reason to be in Florida other than some sort of event that brought him there.
I just remember, you know, Harper's a year older than me, so he was, what, like 14, Paul, and that happened, I'm looking at a 14-year-old. I'm 13. He's like, guy looked like he was 25, and I'm like, Dad, is that what I'm gonna look like in a year? Like, is that how that works? He's like, oh yeah, sure.
I'm still built like a 15-year-old. So, you know,
you and me both,
never,
man.
Never moved on.
You and me both. With Harper too. He's in the news because his agent Scott Boras, they're looking to eye a longer term deal there in Philadelphia, causing a lot of controversy right now. Philly's a 90.5 win total here as we start to talk some MLB futures and win totals as well. How do you see that going? What would the impact be there, depending on all the uncertainty with what Boras wants for his star in Harper?
I love Harper. He's an amazing player. This is a terrible idea for the Phillies. I say this as a Tigers fan who watched Mike Ilitch, you know, rest in peace. I respect how much he loved and cared about his players and how much he wanted to win a title. But he gave those early deals to Miggy and Verlander. Verlander one would have worked out had they kept him. I'm fine with them trading him. But he gave both those guys deals before they needed to be re-upped. And we saw how the Miggy one turned out. And maybe Harper will be better, but Miggy's a walk-in Hall of Famer, generational talent, arguably the best right-handed hitter of his generation with Pujols right there. And we saw how it went for him. Why can't Harper have that happen? You know, he's not immune to that. So if you're already locked up through 31, 2031, I should say, not age 31, why? Why? If you're Harper, fine. Yeah, get as much money as you can. I respect it. But if you're the Phillies, stick with what you got here and revisit it in, like, I don't know, 7 years. Like, why is this even a topic right now?
I'll admit, Paul, when that headline came out, I was like, wait, it's not a 13-year, $330 million deal in 2019. How is this even a discussion? But is the case with the top agents, they're going to do what they're going to do. Paul Spohr, you can follow at Spohr, joins us from Fangraphs right now as we get our early thought preview here on MLB. We'll have a lot more of that here as we get into the month of March and the season gets underway. The one injury news that came out and has so far been an impact to another team in the NL East, it's Kodai Senga for the New York Mets here. I still see DraftKings at 82.5 on the win total, Paul. Some books starting to drop that. What's your outlook on a Met team that with a new a GM there of baseball operations in David Stearns appears to be in somewhat of a rebuild here in 24?
Yeah, you know, they actually telegraphed that to their credit, I guess. Steve Cohen had said, you know, we're not going to necessarily push all in for 24. I thought it was BS when he said it. Turns out it is true. That rotation looks really dicey when you take Senga out of it for now, and he's going to be on the shelf to start the season. If it is a long injury, you just wonder where the pitching comes from. You know, Quintana's a really solid 3-4. He's the number one right now. Can Severino stay healthy? Can Minaya stay healthy? I wouldn't bet on either of them. Like, it's hard to say that they're both going to give you full seasons, 160 plus innings. Hauser, McGill, that's decent at the back end, but you know, they kind of need them now. Like, they're relying on them. I still like the offense. It's really strong, more or less top to bottom. You know, you got Brett Beatty, speaking of a high schooler that I did see here in the Austin area. I like him for like a potential breakout. I've always been a big Harrison Bader fan. He's better defense than offense. And then Francisco Alvarez, that's their 7-8-9. So it's a good lineup, but I don't think they have enough juice with the pitching. This Senga injury is scary. Around 500, yeah. I don't like my wiggle room there, so I'm probably not taking 82.5.
Yeah, no doubt. And a team that has a lot of question marks now in a deep division as well. Paul Spohr joining us here to talk to Major League Baseball. If we go to the futures board, Paul, we just look at the top. Everybody talking about Ohtani and the Dodgers. Ohtani coming out saying his plans to take, you know, 50 or so ABs throughout the spring training campaign. The hype is off the charts. It's 103.5 on the win total, plus 350 now to win the World Series. What is the best way to approach betting the Dodgers, considering they are so heavily taxed in the market, if you want to make a bet here preseason?
I don't know that you can, except to maybe fade. I mean, it's just such a gaudy number, and I understand the excitement around them, but you're tagging a team for 103 wins. It's just such a grind. And let's be honest, there's plenty of question marks in that rotation. Now, do I think that they'll approach it throughout the year and continue to supplement and figure things out, because that's the kind of organization that they are, and they are all in right now. So they're not going to, you know, they're not going to tiptoe around and not go out and make a move. You know, maybe they could be the team for a Dylan Cease trade, things like that. But you look at it, you got Yamamoto coming over from Japan, who looks the part. Everything looks like it's going to click, but you don't know when someone comes clear across the world here how it's going to go that first year. New setup in terms of pitching every fifth day instead of once a week, different ball, et cetera. Tyler Glass now reached a career high in innings last year at 120. Career high. I mean, what can we really bank on him for? I'm a huge, huge, huge Bobby Miller fan. I'm totally in the bag for him as a potential ace. But does that happen this year? That would still be a pretty big step forward. James Paxton, really good when he pitches. But what kind of innings workload are you looking at out of him at age 35? 100 innings? Emmett Sheehan in the five spot? Solid, but again, how much can you really rely on him? I do like some of their reinforcements. Michael Grove, Gavin Stone. We saw bits from them both last year. Gavin Stone really fell on his face in the majors, but I still really love his arm talent. They've got a great system too, so they can go out and get whatever they want. But a .103, I can't do it. Sure. With that pitching, I would need a lot more stable pitching to bet the .103.
In our final 45 seconds, Paul, if you're looking further down the board, who's one team you have already kind of circled as saying, all right, this is a really, really good team to look at as far as a longer shot, whether that's win total or just a or pennant or a World Series in general?
You know, I'm looking in the AL Central there, and I think you can make a case for every team except for the White Sox. I think they're pretty much off the board, but all the other four teams, and of course the Twins are going to be the favorites. I look at KC, my own Tigers, and even Cleveland. Cleveland could be the sneaky team. Their rotation is absolutely filthy, especially if it stays healthy and really connects. The offense is a little sketchy. I totally grant that, but Cleveland's a team I've been looking at. And then one of the Tigers or KC as kind of a rising team this year. They're both getting kind of some buzz, and I think my Tigers could make some real noise this year. I like the offseason they've had as well. So I'm looking in the AL Central.
Yeah, wide open division, it seems like, on paper. Paul, great to see you. I love seeing your face because that means baseball is right around the corner, man. Right. I'm sure we'll be catching up more here as the season gets underway.
Sounds great, gentlemen. Take care.
When we come back, final segment for us here on A Numbers Game. Kelly Bidlin has an NBA play we'll talk about. We'll break down the biggest games for tomorrow's college basketball slate as well.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Big thanks to our entire crew today. We got Matt Hicks, our technical director behind the scenes. Larry as well, hanging out with us here. Kelly Bidlin with me on the desk. It's been a blast filling in here for Gil last few days. Kelly.
Hey, it's been a blast having you. Chris Foster nailing it on audio today.
Sorry, I forgot Chris. Chris back there as well. Yeah,
I was going to be impressed because we got some new crew members since you've been over here. So it was, you missed one.
It's hard to,
you almost went 100%.
Dang it. It's hard to keep
Chris
track.
Chris going to hate you forever now.
Probably.
Just cut his mic, Chris. I'll close
don't
out
hold,
the show.
don't hold it against me. No, been a blast. Kelly, as always, thanks for the assistance throughout here. And we have not updated the golf yet. We also haven't gotten into our bets here for the weekend, at least, or the games we're looking at. But you're off to a good start, Kelly. Mexico Open, because as much as we were lamenting the slow starts for guys yesterday, through the wind yesterday, Eric Van Rooyen, your first-round leader, 8 under, and he is currently the +450 favorite right now to go ahead and win the tournament.
Yeah.
So on a sea of bombers, Kelly, your guy, one of your guys, looking pretty good.
Yeah, I made a few first-round leader bets yesterday. Would have been nice if that was one of them. Didn't, but yes, do have a nice outright price on him in a top 20 bet. So let's just go wire-to-wire, Van Rooyen. Let's just do it. That would be nice. He is currently tied 9 under with Sammy Valamaki, who Matt Brown has a bet on. Matt Brown with the top two on the leaderboard. So long shots, definitely something you should be checking out every week if you're a golf bettor. Yeah, he's got both those guys. I don't even know what number he has on Valamaki. It's got to be close to triple digits. A little hard to figure out in a field like this because it is so weak. But, yeah, so far it's looking okay. And, you know, you and I were talking a little bit off air. I'm glad you brought it up, the whole first-round leader situation, because when we were breaking down the tournament, you know, it really did play out yesterday of kind of the quotes we've heard about this course in the past of that wind picking up later in the afternoon. And it was, you and I were kind of stunned at some of the scores we were seeing early yesterday where there wasn't a lot of guys going low and the conditions were calmer. And, you know, like I got home in the afternoon, I'm watching it on TV. It's like, man, it is blowing out there. And Van Rooyen and a couple of these guys able to go out there and still play through the wind and post some low scores was pretty dang impressive. But that is definitely a note that I have circled, highlighted, bolded everything for years to come at this event. When you get John Rahm bringing that up 2 years ago, and it's really kind of played out ever since then, and you're able to see it basically on a daily basis of just how the coastal winds affect this course and the timing within the rounds that it does. It's something to definitely, if you're a golf bettor out there, to take note of for years to come.
It was wild to see how that all played out. Unfortunately, my guy, Charlie Hoffman, need a big day from the Hoff. 1 over after yesterday. It looks like the cut will be 1 under. So for those of you making bets, keep that in mind as the second round is now underway. Number of guys who haven't even teed off yet there at Vedanta Vallarta. Still a long way to go. But I'm on your side here, Kelly. Let's go. EVR, you've had a couple close calls. Let's get that bad boy home. We've got a lot of golf still to play, though, there at the Mexico Open. While I was talking college baseball, Kelly, you were solidifying an NBA bet for tonight. We have had a good amount of movement here on the odds board today. The ones I'm seeing of note here that are really starting to rise, Lakers getting bet against the Spurs from 9 up to 10 on the opener. It looks like, as well, the Minnesota Timberwolves are starting to get some play in the market, too. That was 3.5-4, now mostly 4.5s. I'm out there as well. And the Suns getting bet on the road at Houston. A lot of teams on second legs as well, too, Kelly, of back-to-backs, which I'm sure is where the nuance comes in here.
Yeah, it does. I still think you're talking about second leg of a back-to-back, though, when you're just returning from the All-Star break. I don't think it's something you should be – I mean, it should definitely be affecting your numbers. The question is how much, and probably not nearly as much as what it would have been a month ago. Look, I mean, the two that are sticking out to me, I haven't made actually any bets so far tonight. My numbers would tell me Minnesota is absolutely a bet over Milwaukee. We've talked about this already during the show, and I just can't bring myself to do it. At some point, I think this Milwaukee thing is going to turn around a little bit, and it would make, you know, all the sense in the world if that did happen out of the All-Star break. And this Minnesota team, they are great defensively. They can just bog down sometimes offensively. Gives me a little bit of pause. But, I mean, look, my numbers say this is a play on the T-Wolves all the way up to 6. And it's, like you said, 4, 4.5 basically everywhere right now. I think it's one I'm going to still end up passing on, though. I can't wait to watch this tonight. Really, really going to be focusing on this Bucks team going forward. I want to see what they can do here to close out the regular season. We talked about them in that division market earlier. And it just feels like this is going to, you know, either turn around or end up being a bit of a train wreck, because it's already, it's heading that way right now. in Milwaukee, especially for Doc Rivers. And again, Damian Lillard is not the guy. Like, we're not talking about him enough for some reason of how much he struggled this year. It really is. When you knew you were going to be trading that defense for offense with letting Jrue Holiday go and bringing in Dame, it was always okay to me, Ben. I know you're a Bucks fan. It was always okay to me to make that switch because I thought the offensive production from Dame would be so overwhelming.
That
it would really outweigh that. And it's just amazing how much. That's why I keep bringing up Giannis in the MVP discussion, because he really is carrying so much of what this team is doing. Middleton's been, you know, that's a big problem with injuries again, and Middleton, and is he going to be around and be able to be healthy through a playoff run? It's a major, major question. But of all the games tonight, that is the one that sticks out to me the most. Timberwolves laying the points. I didn't play it, but I think that is a that would be a fair play. The other one I do have my eye on here is this Heat Pelicans game tonight. Pelicans on the second half of a back-to-back after last night. So the Heat would catch them a little bit, maybe a little bit tired legs heading into New Orleans tonight. Tyler Hero questionable, though. Brandon Ingram questionable for this game right now. So not one that I could bet right now. It will be Pelicans or pass, though. For me, this Pelicans team started to put some things together. You've heard Zion talking recently. He's feeling good out there. He's looking good, playing well. And this Heat team, possibly shorthanded again. We talked about it earlier in the show. This team's struggling on the offensive side of the ball to really get going. So I think you could look Pelicans, you could look Heat team total under might be a good play too. If Tyler Hero ends up missing this game. So those are the two that I kind of have circled. I think Milwaukee, Minnesota is just going to be a complete pass for me, but this Pelicans side definitely will end up being a play. If Hero's out, Brandon Ingram in, even if they both play, Pelicans probably still play for me tonight.
The biggest move of any side or total so far is the under in that Miami-New Orleans game. We're down to 219.5 from a 223 opener. Big, big move there to the under. New Orleans from 3 on the opener to 3.5 market-wide. So you're already seeing a little bit of that, Kelly.
I think that's a great call. I think that's probably a good... Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. There's under money coming in, just period. But you're wondering if some people know some things about maybe whether what the status of Ingram and Hero are tonight, because those are obviously two very offensive centric pieces on both those teams. The other game I'll throw out, I think Suns would be a look for me if I knew Beal was going tonight, but I don't really expect him to go after missing last night. I think this might be a little bit of time before he gets back. I don't want to say that. Maybe another game or two, though, before he gets back into this lineup and playing regularly. The one other one I'll bring up is this Hornets-Warriors game.
It's so funny you bragged that up. I wanted to see if you had a thought on it.
This Hornets team, man, I mean, like, they're turning around a bit. Bridges has been great out there. Brandon Miller, you know, coming into his own. You made the trade for Grant Williams. He had a good game last night in Utah. I mean, it's tough when you're talking about going from Utah, playing a game ever in altitude and then having to play a game the next day or the night before, always problematic. But catching 13 points, Warriors just had a massive game last night against the Lakers. You know, are they going to be able to turn around and be ready to go laying 13 points against the Hornets here tonight? I don't know. That was the one that stuck out to me. That feels like a lot of points. A
couple of respected books already down to 12.5 on that.
Okay.
Seems like that would be the direction.
And LaMelo with a questionable tag right now, so that's what really makes it tough. I mean, he is worth so much.
As far as tomorrow college basketball-wise, no bets for me since the lines aren't out yet, but I am really tempted to look to buy low on Kentucky tomorrow. Kelly, you get Alabama off that super emotional overtime game that they played midweek. We're probably going to see, again, the highest total on the college basketball board tomorrow in Kentucky and Alabama. Two very fast teams, two great offensive teams who struggle to play defense. Guarding can be optional at times for Alabama, but if you're ever looking to buy low on a Kentucky team that, general market sentiment is probably toward their absolute bottom, this would be the game. I imagine you're going to get Kentucky as a home dog in the spot. That's at least the hope here. If you get, I don't know where this will open. If it's, the KenPom number is 2, will folks maybe bake in a little bit of situational angles here, give you more like Kentucky 1, 1 or pick them? But that's a game I could easily see some folks looking to bet the home dog angle in there, Kelly, and flipping that to favorite. So keep that in mind. Okay. Wait when those numbers come out. The talent is so there for Kentucky. It's just a matter of proper usage and execution down the stretch. Coming off a heartbreaking loss at LSU, that's one that I'm really intrigued by tomorrow as we go to the SEC.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Yeah, the more I'm looking at this Hornets one, it might end up being
pull
a play
the trigger.
For me.
Let's it go, Kelly.
I'm going to wait and see the LaMelo news, but man, that is a lot of points tonight.
A walk-off bet, perhaps, for Kelly. No walk-off airport references, but walk-off bets. That's a lot better for our audience.
I was second best airport you've ever been to.
Okay, come on. You're really making this tough on me. There's a great lounge in Dallas. I mean, that's a specific lounge area. Anyway,
West Palm Beach Airport.
I've never been there.
That's a good
I gotta
one.
Go to the Bermuda Airport. That's what I have to go to. We're done here on A Numbers Game.